everyone. I am Heather Markell, and this is another fun episode of the Inspired Nomads. What happens when you leave stability, chuck it all up, and go travel full time? Well, if you've been watching, there's been some not just amazing answers to the experience, but also what we're all learning and what happens as we do it. And today I'm so excited to have Nadine Hayes-Pizzani on because if you're not familiar with it, she wrote an amazing book called Happier Than a Billionaire and a subsequent follow-up. And actually my first place that I went on my journey was Costa Rica. So hers was one of the first books I read during my journey, and I reached out to her and asked her to be on the show, and she said yes, so I'm so excited. So thank you, Nadine, for joining us.
It's so good to be here, Heather, and I love your glasses, by the way.
Oh, thank you. I love that I can see with them and that they're colorful, so.
Yeah, like them a lot.
Thank you. So Nadine, first off, so thank you. I just loved, there's so many parts of your book that I just love, and the experience, just like me, I feel like you were frustrated. So can you share with us a little bit about what the stability was that you had in the United States and that you left behind?
Wow. Yeah, it was stable. It was accurate. I had a job and I had a home and a car and reliable utilities that pretty much worked all the time. And yeah, I mean, I had the American dream, I you know, so it's strange when you work so hard to get things to make you happy that in the end you realize you're just not happy at all. And at 37, that's when we said this before, ran away from home. We essentially just packed up with a cat and a dog. And my husband, of course, and we just took off. We left everything. Yeah.
That's oh, my weird. God. So what did it take for you to, first off, why did you leave all that, right? Because you said, you mentioned you had the stability, you weren't happy, but can you delve into a little bit more about, like, what the unhappiness was about?
It's funny because I like to say, I think it was an existential crisis I was having. It was a broader thing for me, where when you're in your 20s, you think everything's going to magically happen for you and your life will look a certain way. You know, if you work hard enough, it's just going to be happy and fun and everything.
Yeah.
Then you get older and you have student debt and business loans and mortgages and car payments, and you kind of pile things on and you're like, okay, I can handle this because I did all the right things. I went to college and I got a job and I'm working hard, and 40 hour weeks turned to 50 hour weeks turned to 60 hour weeks. And my husband started to get stomach problems, and we knew we were unhappy. My unhappiness is just being irritable. Horribly irritable. My husband's unhappiness was just, it was more of just not talking that much. Just quiet, eating. He ate a lot. He started to eat a lot. We weren't taking care of ourselves. And he got sick, had a stomach problem in the hospital. And it was like just a beacon of light happened when I was next to him on the gurney and I'm looking at him. And that happened when he was around 35, 36. And I'm thinking he will most likely have a heart attack in the next 15 years if we keep going like we're going. And I was a chiropractor, so I treated people who didn't feel well all day long. I treated people who just said, okay, if I make it to 62, I'm going to RV across the country. If I just make it to retirement, all these things will happen. And I was treating people who that didn't happen for. Their knees went out, their backs went out, they got sick, they lost their spouse. So I was really, it was just right in front of my face every day.
Yeah.
And when he got sick, and I said, I am just like all these other people who thought they could just bank time. They'll bank it. And it's impossible to do that. So just thought, well, what if we do what everybody says they want to do? Everybody says, I'm going to quit my job. I'm going to go down to an island. I'm going to open up a bar and have bare feet in the sand. And everybody says it and nobody does it. And I said, what if we just did it? What if we just did it and And maybe happiness was something we left along the way to trade it for things that everybody told me were supposed to make me happy. And all those things complicated my life. Everything just complicated it. It made me happy for 30 minutes, like anything does. Like a new car will make you happy until you get the first ding in the grocery parking lot. And then you're not happy anymore because your car is damaged. All these things, I realized, it was funny. I read a Buddhist book and I was laying in bed and my husband got a 265-gallon fish tank, just a ridiculous reef tank. So he would have to clean it for 8 hours every Saturday. So he's upside down in it with a toothbrush, scrubbing algae off a rock, miserable. And I read, well, you know, Buddha says possessions cause suffering. I'm like, yeah, isn't that something? And he got up out of that fish tank and he's like, I'm suffering. He goes, this is all suffering. Everything we have. And that stimulated a different mindset. Now that mindset, to everybody else, thinks you have lost your mind and you're crazy.
Yes, yes.
So that doesn't pair up with what everybody around you is telling you. And I'm sure you come across that all the time.
Yes, completely. You know, people are like, well, you know, when are you gonna get back to real life? Or, you know, what are you gonna do for real life? Yeah, and actually, there was a quote in your book too about the fish tank too. About I loved how most people will kind of like never really leave the fish tank.
The clown fish. My husband said we would sit in bed and watch the fish tank. He goes, see that clown fish in the corner? He'll never leave that corner. He stays there his entire life. That's his little spot. He says, don't you think that's like all of us? A lot of us never even leave the town we grew up in or the state.
Yeah.
Or the United States. A lot of people fear what that would be like if you left. And how much that fish missed out on what was going on the other side of the tank. And it just never knew. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm Dora. Like, you know, Dora Explorer. So, you know, that movie. I'm like, I have entrapped myself.
Yeah.
Into thinking my life needs to look like this. And when you travel, you're a traveler, and when you go to other places, it really opens you up.
Yes.
That people do different things, different ways. There's different foods and different smells. And I think the excitement of something different, maybe.
Yeah.
Of maybe I don't really know everything like you think you know everything, and that's okay. Maybe you want to explore and wander the world a little bit. And we were just ready for it. And it was ridiculous we did it because my office, we were 10 years in, the magic number to work 10 years in your own office, because that's when you'll hire an associate and you'll do all these things and it's going to grow and then you'll be there more hours. And I left at 10 years. We just paid off $200,000 in student loans. We paid off our student. I mean, we worked to pay off our student loans. And then we just split. And everybody just were like, you got to be out of your mind. The worst ones is the people who told me you'll be back in a year.
Oh,
that was the only ones I didn't like. I felt that was mean-spirited. And then I'm like, well, maybe I will, but I'm not coming back here.
Yeah.
Not here. I'll come back maybe, but not here. So I think we're this weird tribe of people who lay in bed at night and we dream these dreams that some of us don't even tell our spouse. Some we don't tell our friends. We certainly don't tell our parents. No, that is something you do not put on the plate until you're ready to go.
So,
and no, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead and finish your thought. Yeah.
And we're just these dreamers and we think we're weird until we go where all the dreamers went. And then we're like, oh no, I found my tribe. Okay, these are people who thought the same thing. It wasn't so crazy what I wanted. So maybe I was looking a little bit for that. People who had the same mindset as I had.
So first speaking, just because you mentioned parents, you know, I think that's a big, when we talk about the people that I think were crazy and all, how did their belief system and their words for your journey impact you? And what were their thoughts and feelings about it?
I don't even like to dip back into that inkwell because I was raised to be a worker.
Yeah.
Go to school and you work and you work. And when you're tired, you work. I was just that type of philosophy. And they were so proud that I was able to, they're not business people. I started my own business. I started my own practice. I was doing all these things they never did or maybe didn't have the skills to do. And I just walked away from it.
Mm-hmm.
Just who does that? And I understand. And they said the right things by saying, are you sure this is crazy? I think, yeah. Yeah, okay, those are right things to say because maybe I was going crazy. What did they know? Maybe, you know, something was going on in my head. But they knew how unhappy I was. When you're an unhappy person, you're not available to anybody. You're not available to your family. When they come to you with a problem, you kind of like, yeah, well, I got this going on too. And you know, this, and you kind of just, this pile of misery. You're just like misery and misery. And you're just like yapping about misery on the phone or whatever. When I got happier, now it's different. Now the engagement, and when I did this, it was before Skype and FaceTime and everything. So when we came down there, it was really a separation. And that was a really hard thing. But now with all the technology, I'm happy. So when they talk to me, I have a lighter spirit. I'm able to give better advice. It's coming from a completely different mindset. Do you ever ask advice from somebody who's miserable? That is like the worst thing you could possibly do.
Yeah.
You're not going to get, I mean, you'll get some advice, but the really good nuggets usually they themselves can't even get to.
Yes.
And so that has changed. So I'm completely different now. And I'm so much more available to them. I look back at pictures of my nieces and I must have driven from Pennsylvania to New Jersey for their first day of school, kindergarten or first grade. I don't remember it. I don't remember milestones in their life because I was working so much. When I stop that and kind of reimagine my life, I remember everything now. It all fits into these little corners of my brain.
Interesting.
Because all that stress and all that unhappiness took up all the room. And good memories couldn't even imprint themselves. How lousy is that, that you can have a great memory and not imprint it because you're full of anxiety and stress and unhappiness? So all these things, it was so funny. I learned that after I came here, after I decompressed.
Yeah.
Your body is just covered in these, it's like a varnish of years of just slacking on varnish every year until you're so thick that
yeah.
I had to sand it all away. Just sand it and sand it and sand it and get back to where the nice wood was. And moving here and stripping yourself, and I know that's happened to you where you're in a foreign country, you don't understand the language,
yeah.
You don't understand the street sign. You don't know what you just picked at groceries. You don't understand the labels. Everything is so new. I remember some weird question in my head, like, where am I going to get our oil changed? Such a weird thing to think, right? It's just like an odd thing to come up. But I'm like, I truly don't even know who to ask for any of this. So you can't worry about grudges and problems, you know, and this one did something to me 15 years ago and I remember how she, you can't, because you are literally trying to understand the person right in front of your face, give you directions. Like it strips it all down. And what's great about that is as we get older, how many times in our life do we get brand new experiences?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? Spanking new, where it's all like you remember all of it because it's just so different and crazy. And I learned, I didn't know all these things when I was doing this. I was just following this just light that I saw after my husband was sick. It was just a light that opened up. And I said, there just has to be a better way.
Yeah. Wow. I love so many things about what you just said. That was amazing. What about, you also said something about wanting to be with like-minded people. So that is something I know that as I've traveled, I thought initially, I really thought I was crazy, but I just had to go with it. And I did.
Yeah.
And then I started meeting all these other crazy people. And of course, crazy people are the best people. So yay. But you know, and I started realizing actually there's a lot of us out there. I'm not the only one. that think like this and do this. So have you met, you know, where you are, other people with this thought process, and what's that been like for you?
You realize the world is full of them. There's full of dreamers and risk takers and people who the status quo isn't good enough. The people who don't have much, but they'll say, I'm not going to be in a cubicle the rest of my life. There's just no way. When I was in the midst of being miserable, I would have said, well, you better get a life. You better figure it out. I probably would have said that back then.
Yeah.
But now that happiness and the freedom of that means so much to me that I know that a lot of that can be a trap, the cubicle, thinking you need to be there. Now, we all need to make a living and find a way and take care of ourselves.
Yeah.
We do need that. But do we need to be 60 hours at a cubicle? Some people just say no. Some people say, I'm just not going to do it. I'll figure out a way. So the world is full of those people. I remember when we were in the midst of our job, and I think we went to like Bahamas and took a boat out to an island, and we jumped in the water, snorkeled, and there was a woman filming it. This was back in the day when it was like an underwater video camera.
Yeah.
And she'd sell it for like 40 bucks. Okay. So she did these tours. So she went as we went to this island, and she had the rest of the day not to do anything. So she was sitting in the hammock reading a book. And I went there, must have been like 32. And I was just so intrigued by her. And I asked her, I'm like, well, where are you from? She goes, oh, I was a banker in the United States.
Wow.
And I'm like, you're kidding me, a banker. And she goes, yeah. And it was horrible and I hated it. Now I come here. I go on this, the boat. There's, you know, 40, 50 people snorkeling. I videotape all you guys. Most of you guys will buy my videotape. It's $40 a pop. You know, captain gets a cut. The whole rest of the day I sit and I read. I love to read. And that about knocked me off my feet.
Yeah.
Knocked me off my feet. This was a woman who was very established. I'll tell you another person, somebody around here, who her and her husband moved here. She used to be a very, very accomplished financial banking person in Canada. Big time job with lots of responsibility. She's here making ice cream.
Wow.
Really good ice cream. I think they just do now alcohol-infused ice cream. Now she wants to do ice cream cakes because nobody makes ice cream cakes in Costa Rica because they melt.
Yeah.
So if you want one, you know, you have to find somebody. So I just love her story because this is somebody who didn't have to leave. She had it all together, but she looked for an opportunity and a different lifestyle. So I just meet them every day, and especially now with the books, people contact me with their stories. And it's all so possible. And if it's not possible in your life, a vacation could be possible for you. Somebody just leaving.
Yeah.
Don't just go to the state where you live, the shore there.
Yeah.
Look for good deals. Go out of the country. Find someplace fabulous. And maybe that's enough to get you through the rest of the year. If you can't do that, sometimes the dream is just enough. After a hard day, and you lay in bed and you're like, oh, what if I ended up in Monaco? You know, just like living there. And like,
yeah,
that can keep you going. And you shouldn't have people in your life tell you that's dumb or stupid or snap out of it, because these are the things that keep people going in situations where they can't get themselves out of. So you don't have to do what I did. This was ridiculous what we did. We just left everything. It was, I don't know how, you know, I think at the time, I remember there was a moment when I said, the risk of not doing it was greater. It's kind of a weird way to look at it. The risk of not going now is greater than staying, because if I don't go now, I'm not going to go.
Yeah.
When I was in my 20s after college, I was going to backpack Europe, but I didn't. Because I was going to save up for chiropractic school. I took a job working in retail. Because I'll always have time to backpack across Europe. That's what I actually thought. There'll always be time. Well, you graduate and you're in debt with student loans. I'm in debt with business loans. I can't backpack at that point. I'm so loaded with so many other obligations. It didn't even seem, I'm thinking back, I had a moment in time when I didn't have any responsibility where I could have done it. Now, flash forward all these years, I thought about that. Now I have a ton of responsibility I'm letting go of, but I'm not going to do it in 5 years. I know myself. I'm not going to do it. Things will change. Something will happen. There'll be more debt or more this or more that. You have to be honest with yourself. Sometimes when you're trying to figure out why you're unhappy, sometimes you got to realize you're maybe selfish, irritable, not so nice to your spouse. You got to really like reflect on the things about your personality that's pointing you in that. That's a hard thing to do. That's a hard thing to say. You know, I'm irritable every time I come home. I'm not nice the minute I walk through the door. I'm tired.
Yeah.
I'm hungry. We would collapse in our scrubs on the couch, I remember, and hardly even talk to each other at some point. With Chinese food. A lot of Chinese food for some reason. I remember coming home. Comfort food, getting it on the way, and just think, wow, this is a crazy way to live. And it's not getting any better. It didn't seem to fix itself. Now, in retrospect, maybe hire an associate. Maybe they could have worked my hours. But come on. I mean, realistically, you know, everybody thinks they'll do that. And they just get more wrapped into the whole thing. So, yeah, you know, I look back and it just seems like when I wrote that book, it was so real time of the emotions. You could see I'm trying to figure this out along the way.
Yeah.
When I came here, I just remember like the ground smelling like carrots, like, because Costa Rica is so beautiful and so, I mean, the wildlife and the nature, it's all so right in front of your face. And I appreciated it maybe a little more being from a very urban area in New Jersey.
Yeah.
We had this big oil refinery in our town. So you got to see a lot of that where I grew up. So it was just so green, Heather. It was like, I try to explain to people when, if you're ever editing a picture and you take the saturation too high and it gets kind of weird and you're like, oh, that's so crazy. That's like too much. That's how it felt. I felt like everything, every slider was turned all the way up and I'm getting blasted with these colors and these smells and just surrounding me. And one of the first houses we rented, a kinkajou jumped on my window. I didn't even know what a kinkajou was. Like this cute little monkey-looking bear. They call them honey bears. They're cute little things. Like, where am I living? How could that ever have happened to me anywhere else? Animals everywhere. A horse shows up at my house. Just all this beauty and nature. And I connected to that. I think when we work too much and we're in urban environments and you're not outside as much, you don't realize how much you miss it.
Yeah.
Now I can't imagine my life without it. I can't imagine, I got monkeys in my yard. I can't imagine not having parrots flying overhead because I wake up in a good mood every single day, Heather. It just, it's hard to be down when you have a lot of beautiful nature around you.
Yeah.
So maybe my experience was a little more personal because maybe I just naturally needed that.
Well, and it's funny because as you were talking, I was like, oh, and of course in America, we're all like, oh, we're unhappy, get a therapist, right? And then if you add up all the money that you've spent on the therapist over the-
Should have went on a vacation maybe. Save some of that money. Talk it out, of course. But that therapist should say, get away, get out of where you're at. I always tell people that. If you don't have money, go to a park. Get out of the house and your surroundings. You need to get away to think and clear your head.
Yeah.
Because your head just races with the thoughts.
Yeah.
It races and races and races and replays it and replays it and replays it. And you're trying to figure things out. And luckily I was able to figure all of that out here. I got to figure out why I wasn't happy and what I'm really looking for in life. And I look back and I'm just so thankful. I'm thankful for the people here that were so nice to me. We held up, like I'm in a government agency. Now you know in the United States, and if you're at motor vehicles and you're in front and there's a huge line behind you, and you can't speak the language. So it's not, the line's not moving because you were there. Now I'm that person. Now I'm that person. I'm in their shoes now. So I'm that person holding up the whole line. But instead of the people behind me yelling at me, they would call up people who knew English, their cousin, their friend, and they would give the phone, and then they would, we would translate back and forth.
Yeah.
Because they knew the quicker we got out of there, the faster the line is going to move.
Yeah.
They thought a couple steps ahead, so they didn't actually react. And that's one thing I like about Costa Ricans is they're slower to be reactive like that, to hit that anger button. Much slower. They kind of analyze the situation, you know, they'll walk away quicker than engage with just somebody who's like out of their mind yelling at them. They'll just be like, okay, you know, and they'll just walk away. So I think that helped a lot, that I was in a country where I wasn't made to feel like I didn't belong. And that made me feel like this could be a home, because we didn't know if this was going to be a forever place.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we just said, hey, yeah, Costa Rica. Yeah, let's do it. I mean, it was, you know, everybody thinks I had a master plan. But back then, there wasn't a lot of things on the internet. This was like when we started looking, 2005, 2006, no real blogs, not too many forums.
Yeah.
And if somebody did say something, it's always bad. That's why I wrote, when I started my blog all those years ago, I was just tired of hearing everybody's horrible experience. They went to the store and they bought the wrong thing, or it was just like enough already. So I thought, well, I used to be really miserable, and I probably was one of those people who would just tell you everything that was wrong. But what if I just wrote on my blog the good thing that happened that day?
Yeah.
So I said, okay, so this happened, but this is the good part of the story. Then this person came and helped, and it changed everything. And it wasn't a Pollyanna look at Costa Rica. By all means, it's not. I write enough things that tell the truth about my ups and downs here. But a good attitude goes so far. You know, a pleasant attitude. Happier people are more beautiful than beautiful people.
Yes.
And if you sat at a party with a very beautiful person who was so ugly on the inside, you couldn't wait to get away from them.
Yep.
And then you're at a party and you're sitting next to these just hilarious people, having fun, inspiring, great people. You're like, yeah, I want to be more like that. Like, you look at those people, you're like, yeah, I want that to rub off on me.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of what I learned through this, is just be the one with the good attitude. You be the one. Don't wait for somebody else. You be the one with the good attitude. So.
And there's so much around what you're saying. I'm feeling like existentially, like, you know, I think there's a problem with this idea that you know, you work really hard till you're 65 or 75, and then you get to go and enjoy your life.
Yeah, yeah.
The concept that, you know, and I think especially in America, I think I'm from New York, so I mean, everyone's either angry or in a hurry, and we're not very nice to each other in those situations, which we're in a lot. And I think I've certainly walked away from stuff in New York where I'm like, oh God, I got to spend the rest of the day feeling like a complete jerk for the way I just talked to somebody because they were walking too slow. Really?
Yeah. That's very unique for us East Coasters, of the slowness or out of my way or that type of thing. Being from New Jersey, I could really relate. My sister says to me now, you got soft when I go back to visit. You're too soft. I just thought you drive too slow, you know, I'm just not, you got to be sharp in those areas. You got to be sharp. You got to be quick. You got to be fast. There's a rhythm to living there. And those rhythms that I learned didn't fit me. And maybe they never fit me.
Right.
So what do you do when you're dancing to the wrong beat your entire life?
Exactly.
Well, you need a new song. So I think even just somebody identifying that about themselves.
Yeah.
Will go a long way to saying, okay, this area is just too fast for me, or maybe this area is too slow for me. I'm not gelling with people because I'm running on octane, you know. So those are just such small qualities about yourself that when you dig down and look, I think this sounds like a psychology session. I think those are the things that will help you figure out how to be a little more happier and a little more content. Because, like, I always want to just say again, nobody has to do what I did. That was a, that was such a big example of finding happiness, of picking up and moving. But what I learned along the way were just the small minutia of it all that I figured out that helped me.
Well, and I love the whole concept of the, you know, dancing to a different beat and all that. When, you know, I'm kind of sensitive to energy, and I started noticing before I took off that this weird feeling that I was in New York, and it was almost like my heart was beating to some other pace that wasn't mine. And I was, yeah, you know, running all the time to get somewhere fast when I wasn't really in a hurry. I'm like, whose timing am I on here? And I think getting away has allowed me also to be like, well, this is my pace. It may change day to day, but whatever it is, it's my pace, and I don't have to be following everybody else's rhythm to figure out my path.
And once you figure that out, and once you kind of zone in on that, you can then make maybe small, little better choices to try to keep on that. But it gets hard. It gets hard when you're living a life you don't, or a job you don't want to be in. Maybe the coworkers you don't get along with. Everything around you is just not working. And it's such a scary thing to take on just a new dream. Like we all, I like to think we all have an act two.
Yeah.
My act one was that office.
Yeah.
I worked hard. I went to college till I was 27, and I did the right thing. And I worked so, so hard, and I sacrificed so much to get there. And that was act one. But now I have an act two, and it's a great act two. And it's a great, if we're doing three act structure, it's a great middle part to the book. It's wonderful. And maybe there's an act three.
Yeah.
But the difference now is when I was in my act one part of my life, I was just dreaming of something different. Bucket list. People always ask me now, what's on your bucket list? I have no bucket list anymore. And now I always want to travel.
That's so funny. Yeah.
I always want to go places. That's a given. I will go to Toledo today if somebody bought me a plane ticket, just to see what Toledo is. I don't care. I will be happy wherever I land. Everything's an adventure now. But put that aside. I don't dream of other things anymore. There's only things I like to do, more projects, more books, more things. But that constant bucket list, I have to get it done. Almost like I have to check it off kind of thing.
Yeah.
I don't have that. And I think I had it before because I saw the clock ticking before. Because there wasn't, I was squeezing in time and places in my life, like trying to weave in certain moments. So there has to be a list, because there's a list for everything. There's a grocery list. There's a this list. So now my dreams are on a list. So, you know, my bucket list. I can't even imagine being in that place anymore, because now everything is open to me and every experience will be great. And I think that comes from when you just stop putting this weird timeline on your life. And so I'm at that place now. And like I said, maybe there's an act three, that's fine, but I'm not, you know, just running a marathon anymore to get to it. A slow walk.
That's funny, because actually, I mean, I was realizing recently that I'm like, I should have a bucket list. I don't. So thank you.
Yeah. I get asked that a lot. I get asked that so many times, the bucket list question. And that just went the day I landed here. There's no more bucket list for me. So you
pick up, you move to Costa Rica, you're not really sure what's going to happen, what you're going to do, but what are some ways that, any creative ways you found to like make money, or I mean, because we all have to support ourselves and.
The money question, always the money question. When we moved here, we were going to live on $1,000 a month. So we had roughly around 5 years to figure it out. We'll figure it out. We opened up chiropractic offices, maybe we can open a business, because until you have residency, you can't work legally.
Right.
You can open up a business, but you can't, but you have to be very careful how you work that business. So let's put that aside. So we had bought a piece of property we were going to build this house on. It ends up, that's a very complicated issue, but there wasn't legal water to that piece of property. So we lost all of our money. And that's a very... it's not as hard to talk about now, but it was like, to think that all happened after we moved here, and how could we have done that? So we were like, wow, okay, where are we, what are we going to do? We were so happy in Costa Rica, we couldn't even imagine going back, even after that happened. So by that time, I was just writing about being happy and things I was doing. And the book was a funny thing because I sent it out to, for all the inspiring writers out there, this is my story. I send it out, query letters out to agents, literary agents. And so many, I can't even count. People ask me how many. I don't know. I think every agent that's living on the planet, I send it out to. And everything, and it's interesting because you don't even send your work. You send the idea of your story to them. And I either got an immediately bounce back rejection, or I got the more thoughtful rejections. Of one in particular was, nobody wants to read about a woman who moves to Costa Rica. And then some weird thing at the end about, do you write about vampires? Because I think Twilight might have been big back then. So I was like, what is this? Write about vampires. Like, that's a weird transition of the segue. I was like, maybe I should. Vampires in Costa Rica. But
vampires,
I was
too.
maybe that always is the big hit, top hit. I was so demoralized because I thought at least I'd get a chance to send the first chapter in or read anything. I didn't even get that. I didn't even get anybody saying anything really particularly nice or you know, responsive. So I can't even remember this moment. I sat at the table. I'm like, what am I going to do? You know, I guess this is it. I'll put it in the draw. I'm the person who wrote a book that it goes in the draw now. And my husband said, well, there's got to be something else you can do. Well, for, you know, everything we've ever done, we've done on our own. So my husband always says, we've done on our own. We've teamed up and used our brain. And can't you self-publish? But self-published back then, well, what we remember when we were younger is you buy all these books and you stick them in your trunk.
Yes.
And you get your poor family to buy your book. And yeah. It's just like you're driving around, you stop at a park. I'm not sure how people did it. But I said, well, that's not an option. We're in Costa Rica. And that's when Amazon they started their self-publishing. But one of the biggest things that just happened was Kindle went down, the reader, e-reader. Remember when Kindle used to be very expensive? It was a $300 priced item.
Yes.
It went down like overnight to $79.
Yeah.
And that just happened. And I'm like, well, he goes, well, how much does it cost to do? I'm like, this doesn't cost much to put this up. He goes, just upload it. No, whatever. Maybe we'll make, this is what we wanted to do. Maybe we'll make $8 a month to pay our, I think it was our phone bill.
Yeah.
That's what we said. And we will pay it, and we will go out and have a soda on the beach, and we'll celebrate those $8. That's still $8 of earned income. 6 weeks after it went up, CNN called me. And they put me on CNN.com on their travel section. They plastered me, you know, the lady who moves to the coast. The reporter just loved the book.
That's awesome.
And that's how it started.
Wow.
And my life went from somebody who lost their money and didn't quite know what to do. And we were thinking, I was thinking about opening up a hot dog stand at the beach.
Yes.
My husband wisely said, Nadine, you pass out in the heat. How are you going to stand at a hot dog stand? I'm like, I don't know. I'll figure it out. We went from that to here. Now I have the happier house. And that is just the best, amazing comeback story of just working hard and not getting too far in the dumps and not being so angry about what happened that I'm just going to kill my next 30 years and just be one of those people in the forums. We all know those forums that just go off big, long things of typing what happened to them. I go, no, you know, I'm just going to keep writing. And I wrote more books after the first one. I wrote one about moving here, about buying here, about living here, residency, and all those questions that so many people would ask me that now I just have all this trust from people. So if they do it, they know I'm going to give them really good information at the very least. So this is where I'm at. It's such a sweet place to be. It's just such a sweet place that everything happened. You know, that's so cliche, but for a reason. Everything happened for a reason. I'm just so much smarter now and wiser and more appreciative. This house was, it became almost like it was becoming transparent. Like it was the dream that was there, and it just started like the slider, but now in the other direction. It's fading away, and it's fading away, and then it just came back. And, you know, it's I'm so grateful to people who read my book, who people who email me. We're real active on social media. We answer everybody's questions. And I never thought, I always loved to write. And I wrote when I was working in my office, and I wrote these stories. And I just never thought that I could actually call myself a writer. And there, my dream came true. The big dream came true. So,
wow. Congratulations. That's just, it's an amazing story, but it's really wonderful to hear. I mean, we've exchanged some messages. I know I don't know you super well, but from what I do know of you, you seem really hardworking and honest. And it's really lovely when someone like you just, you know, just works hard, follows your heart, and you end up where you do. And I love that.
I appreciate that. That means more to me than anything. Then that when somebody emails me, they're going to get really honest answers about, I've had people, I mean, honestly, they've emailed me in a waiting room of a lawyer's office, ready to sign a paper or something. Oh, and I'll give them a couple, I'll say, you need to ask these two questions before you sign it. And then they ask and they end up not signing it, and wisely not, because of a couple of things I told them. So that's great. That's great to help people not lose their money and have happen what happened to me. That feels really good. So maybe that was supposed to be my story. Maybe that was supposed to be it, and it all worked a certain way.
Yeah.
To get to this point and make me more appreciative of where we are now.
Yeah. Yeah. And I found that for myself and several of the other people I've spoken to, that that ability to sort of start putting life situations into a perspective of it happens for a reason, and actually seeking the reason rather than getting angry about it, seems to be another common one that we have. So it's nice to see that in you, and that, you know, it's just like, it's funny because even where you are now is probably happening for a reason for that act three or whatever comes.
Yeah,
next.
Maybe. Yeah. I like to say, and it goes a long way, that saying, necessity is the mother of all inventions, or there's a saying like that. Like,
yeah.
Sometimes when your back is in a corner, that's when the best ideas happen for you.
Yeah.
When you need to fight your way out of a paper bag.
Yeah.
You know, I always like to, I think of myself like that. I think when, I always like to think how unfortunate it is for people who, there's quite a few of them here, trust fund people who never quite can get their act together because there was never the necessity to find something you're good at. Because to find something you're good at means you spend a long time being bad at something. Let's just say an instrument, for example.
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
Years and years and years and years, but you just want it so bad. You want it so bad. And then you start getting good. So I think sometimes those people, it was unfortunate they weren't given the chance to earn it on their own and work hard and go through the bad times and miss payment on an electric bill and do all those things that get you out of bed earlier than somebody else, makes you work longer hours than somebody else.
Yeah.
And I think I kind of fall in that category where, okay, the challenge is in front of me and I have to find a way to move forward, and I will work at what I learned from the office. I will work hard. Maybe I'll work harder than the next person.
Yeah.
Because I know that this is what I want. Like, it's right in front of me, and that's what I'm going to go for. So I think that you have to have that kind of mindset. If you want to do something like what we're doing, where you're thinking a little bit outside the box, then you need to really want it so bad that you will sacrifice, and you know you're going to have hard times, and you know you're not going to live the way you did. And you just have to, I was okay with all that. Everybody said, aren't you worried about, sometimes no electricity, no water for quite some time, just a lot of
that. Wi-Fi.
Oh, definitely that. It was all okay. I didn't even care about all that. That wasn't even on my radar. I mean, it's shocking when you kind of, realize, wow, this is not the United States. This is very, very, very different. But that didn't affect my happiness. That was just a weird, quirky thing I had to learn to live with.
Yeah.
Now, that's not everybody. That could very much, and I've seen it firsthand, where people like, nope, can't do it. I've seen people leave here because of cheese. They can't get the cheese they want. I'm like, really? That's enough to leave? Cheese?
Oh my God.
Yeah, so I think, you know, we all have the best intentions sometimes, and we think we can just get up and go, but you really got to dig deep. You got to say, why am I doing it?
Yeah.
And if it's for the adventure, the fun, the new smells, the new sounds, the feeling like a kid again.
Yeah.
That's what travel does. You feel like a kid again.
Yeah.
Because everything is new.
Yeah.
And that's why you do it. Then that's absolutely why you do it.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting because totally agree. And I love the energy in you that has come out because of your experience. Do you think, because now that you've lived in Costa Rica for a while, what are you doing to make, you know, the new experiences and feeling like a kid again, since you're moved and not necessarily
a
backpacker?
No, that's a good point. Things have changed for us. It's funny you say that. My husband and I were just talking the other day that our lives are making a shift. Like we feel like it's shifting because now we have the house and people come and rent it to stay. And I'm in the hospitality business now. So I'm learning those type of things. And which, let me tell you, it's so much easier than being a chiropractor because people come here and they're happy.
Yeah.
On vacation. I treated people who threw their back out.
Yeah.
I mean, these poor people were in so much pain. So people come here, they're already smiling. They're like, this is great. And they jump in the pool and everything is so much easier. But so we're kind of moving in different directions, doing more press for different things and more books. And it's all great. I never want more, though. Mm. We never want more. That's the one thing that I knew screwed me up all those years ago, was that kind of weird more feeling. Where maybe it's just a desire for something new, or people telling you to have a better house, or maybe you need a better car, or that. I'm very cautious of the more. I don't need, if it wasn't for this being a business, I would live in one room with my husband. We've done it before in Costa Rica. I don't need anything. So when we talk, I think about that. Am I doing this for more, or am I doing this for other reasons, for experience, or that type of thing? So I'm kind of still gauging myself and still measuring things, like a little seesaw of where I'm at, because you can fall back into an old routine.
Yeah.
You really can. Just because you're living, I'm here in paradise, does not mean that all those years of that can't sneak back when I'm stressed and, you know, people haven't shown, or, you know, all those things that come from running a business. I don't want this business to be like my other one. I want it to be different and unique and special. And I hope people who've stayed here know that that's what I'm trying to provide.
Yeah.
So to make things new and fresh, I'm lucky being a writer, because writing is new and fresh every day, because you get to go into your head. And I'm dabbling a little bit in fiction now. So now screenplays.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's fun. Yeah. So now you're different people in your head every day. I'm lucky I have that as a craft to take me away and put me someplace else and still be able to be a kid, because now I'm pretending I'm a 16-year-old boy and I'm trying to write dialogue for that. So that's so much fun.
Yeah.
So I think that's where my future may be headed, in that direction.
So I think what I just heard in a way was like a juxtaposition. It's that idea of like, first you need to physically have experiences that are new and different. And then once you're in that happiness, then cerebrally, emotionally, mentally, you can create, you don't need to move around physically because you're able to just create the experience you want.
Yeah, be happy like where you're at, kind of thing that everybody tells you to do, but you don't quite know. What does that mean?
Yeah.
Be happy where at. I don't even know where to start. It's funny, I've realized after all, because it's been quite, we moved here 2007, so it's been quite a few years and many emails later, of the type of people who dream of this and come down. And there's people who They don't know why they want to do it or what they want to do. They just know they want to be here. Then there's a second group of people who kind of have an idea, something that they do. Let's say they play the guitar and I just want to spend more time guitar. Maybe I can get some gigs on the beach. I want to go there for that. And then there's this interesting third category of people who, yeah, I play the guitar, but they do it well. They do their craft well. And they're at a time for a move and a change. And those people really interest me, that come down here with a real skill, a real craft, a real joy of doing something. And they've done, you know, some musicians are here after 20 years working in New York City, gigs in New York City. And they come here and they're so darn good. And they stand out so much because they have that type of experience. I always think those people might just make it. Mm. Those people might just make it because they know what made them happy. I mean, if you're going to be a musician for 20 years in New York City, that type of lifestyle, and you're still doing it, yeah, that means you're a musician. It's just who you are. Yeah. So, there's different, whether it's writing or painting, you know, people who do art and interesting things like that. I'm very interested when they come here, because when they make it and they can make a living, it's just such a relief and joy on their face that their act two is part of that dream they had and that passion they had, but they were able to kind of shift it and morph it into this other surrounding where it's a little quieter, a little peaceful. And you know, like you say, in New York, it's maybe slower people walking. They don't have to say, come on, get out of the way, that type of thing.
Completely. Yeah. So just thinking about people that might be watching this video that are sitting in New York or New Jersey or wherever they are, feeling kind of unhappy and mid-career and frustrated and wanting a change, what kind of tips would you offer them?
I would say immediately go on a vacation. Go on a vacation, go somewhere or go for a drive, you know? Go a road trip or something like that. I think if they're feeling stressed, they need to get out of their environment. They need a fresh sunrise somewhere else or a sunset. They need that. That's going to give them, you know, the fuel for their next step. If they have the money to a sabbatical, if you're there, can you leave for a month from your work? Would they let you? I mean, is it, can you work, how about this? Can you work online? Can you tell your boss, listen, I'll still work. You know, now that's great what's happening now. You have so many more people moving here because they can work. Because the internet and they didn't need to find a job here. They can take their job with them.
Yeah.
Is that something that you can do? You could test the waters a little bit and just go someplace new and fresh. Those are all the starting points to making this happen. And I wouldn't necessarily talk about it to too many people. I think your spouse or significant other or maybe a good friend that you can be open with. But this is not a discussion for Karen on the cubicle across that complains about her heel spurs every day. You do not want to tell Karen that you want to do this. You're not going to get a good response. And it's going to eat you up that everybody's, you know, just not supporting this nutty dream that you have. So just keep it to yourself until you're ready to pull the plug or talk about it with really happy people or go into a forum, a really happy forum on Facebook or something where people, you know, are upbeat. And that's the beginning. That's the start. You know, how do you start? How do you think? It's that. It's who you're telling. It's lying in bed watching. I know everybody's watching House Hunters and all those international House Hunters, which is funny because we were on it. So I can't believe how many people have seen me on that show. No, please don't. It's just such a, I laugh so much that that's the heavy hitter of that one. But you're all watching it. You're all dreaming of it. And there's nothing wrong with in bed, cuddling, thinking what if, hearing the sound of the ocean, smelling a coconut. I mean, like all those things, all those sensory things that you can do before you go to sleep. I think that's what you do. That's where you start.
I love it. Oh, it's beautiful. So before we end, are there any last comments or advice or anything that you want to share with everyone?
Well, I really enjoyed this interview. This was great. You're really great, Heather. This was a lot of fun. What do I want to share? I just want people to know that there could be a whole other life out there for them that doesn't look anything like their life now. Like it could just be quieter or louder or full with more friends or maybe less friends or closer to family or farther away from family, depending on the situations. That's all possible. They all could have an act too. Everybody can have that.
Yeah.
And I want people to just believe in their dream and believe there's a path forward. And it's not going to look like everybody's path. It's going to be windy and it's going to be dark, but there will be light at times. And as long as you have a good attitude, you pretty much can push that dream. You can package that dream to a place in your head where you can always unpack it. You can unpack it in the subway. You can unpack it on the bus. You can unpack it on the most stressful times. And there's going to be a day that you're going to unpack it and be exactly where you want to be. Mm. And until that moment happens, you can't let people steal that from you and rip it away from you.
Yeah.
Because there's dream thieves out there. If you've been in a Facebook group, you'll see the dream thieves will rip out your nice little question that you, how was it like to live in Costa Rica? And then there's 300 comments of just, it's barbaric. So you have to be ready for that and just know, this is my little dream. It's in a little box. It has a nice little bow on top and you don't get to unpack it. I will unpack it myself. So I want people to still believe in that and still watch podcasts like yours and listen to podcasts like, and find the happy people and the positive people and sit in a room with them and sit and Karen, I feel bad for her heel spurs. I hope they get better. And she sees her doctor, but Karen needs to stay in her cubicle over there. And after work, you go and you find your tribe and you find the people who are happy and make you smile and make you laugh. I had way too many years where I don't think I remembered laughing. And I think that's ridiculous. I think that's a shame that I did that to myself. So find that. Find your tribe.
Oh, wow. Thank you. I just feel like this was such a heart-centered conversation. I so appreciate you sharing everything. It feels like a very honest and deep and enriching soul level conversation that we've had. So I appreciate that.
And that's why I think I tell people, I think it was an existential crisis. I didn't know it was, but now when I think back, I go, no, it was the whole thing. It was the whole thing. And it turned out great.
Yes. I see that. So if someone's watching and they wanted to, you know, reach out to you, because I know I did and you were so responsive, thank you. If they wanted to chat with you, ask you questions, what's the best way for them to do that?
There's my website, happierthanabillionaire.com. There's my Facebook page, Happier Than a Billionaire. My Instagram page, Happier Than a Billionaire. My Twitter, because it's shorter, it's Happier With Less. But I answer everybody's question. And I would love to hear from people. My email is puravita@happierthanabillionaire.com, which is a ridiculous long name for an email. I've realized that it's like, who is going to, but people type it out and then they probably misspell it and it gets bounced back and they get it. That's it. And my books are all on Amazon. It's so funny. I never have any books. Like I need to hire a PR person. I should have books behind me. You know, when authors, like they sit for interviews and they have their tower of books. I'm always like, I need to do that, but I never have my books. I'm in Costa Rica, so I never have my books
here. You know what I'm going to do? When I edit this video, I'm going to put some pictures of books behind you.
I've always realized I do press. I never have these. People have beautiful pictures of them signing them at a table, and there's towers of them. And I'm like, no, I'm always, I don't know. I don't do that. I should, but you can find them on Amazon.
Yeah, well, actually, and on Nook, I have the Barnes & Noble Nook, so I think a lot of people have gone digital, so I'm glad that you kind of don't have the paper stack anyway.
For us travelers, that makes all the difference.
It does.
To be able to get your books. And that was the saddest thing when I moved here, is I didn't have books like I did. But then technology changes. And who knows, the next person who's listening to this, technology may change again, and they'll have even more opportunities here and, you know, more advantages that I didn't have when I came. So anything is possible.
Totally. Well, Nadine, thank you so much for joining me today. This has been such a wonderful conversation. I don't have enough words to express, so thank you.
It was a great day. It was a great day.
Thank you. And if you're watching this and you either are someone that should be on the show or you know someone else that should be, I would love to have you. Please fill out a questionnaire at www.interviewquestionnaire.com, and I will be in touch and set up a time with you. And also, if any of you watching have questions that you want me to ask future guests, also please email me and let me know at heather@heathermarkell.com. And thank you so much for watching another episode, and I'll see you on the next one. Bye.